The OC podcast is proudly brought to you by beer52.com. And as a listener to the show, we would like to reward you with a free case of craft beer. All you need to do is pay the $2.95 delivery. Head on over to beer52.com/MFC and order your free case today. Beer52 is a 5-star rating in Trustpilot, so it's easy to see that their members love their service. So head on over now to beer52.com/MFC and order your case.
Beer. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today, myself, Jay and Buster will look back on the victory over St Mirren. We'll look ahead to next Sunday's game against Hearts. We'll discuss a rebranding of the Motherwell women's team. And we'll see what else takes a fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, a Saturday afternoon, a bit of a rare occasion, but welcome along regardless.
Cheers.
Good afternoon.
Jay, as always, I'll start with yourself and... Myself and I were both at the game on Wednesday night. Not a vintage performance, certainly, the 2-1 victory over St Mirren, but two magnificent goals winning us the game. We went ahead after a bright opening to the game. Jake Hasty with surely what is a goal of the season contender. Then took our foot off the gas somewhat, sat in. St Mirren were able to get level with about 17 minutes to go before, again, we found our extra gear, we moved through them, and there was Alan Campbell to finish off a brilliant team move involving David Turnbull and Elliot Freer to clinch all 3 points, and now our fifth win in a row.
Yeah, I mean, it was job done, essentially. You know, as you say, not particularly, you know, from some of the home performances we've had the last few weeks, it certainly wasn't hitting the heights as that. You know, as those kind of attacking performances, I thought Aribe was, you know, quiet as he was at Dens Park. And in fact, I thought there was a lot of parallels between the St Mirren and Dundee away games. Both, you know, teams fighting for their lives, organised, looking to kind of get tore in. Maybe actually making the game a wee bit more physical. You know, the kind of thing we would have looked to do perhaps prior to the turn of the year. But we've coped with it well. I think we've kind of went into those games, both at Dens Park and at St Mirren Park, looking to, you know, be a wee bit more defensive, a wee bit more cautious, and try and use our pace to hit in the counter. And I thought it was, you know, it obviously worked. You know, we got the 3 points. It's a big, big 3 points. Keeps the run going. Obviously, all the other results on the night went our way anyway. And so we'd be sitting here 4 points behind the St Johnson in sixth place. It's you know, mind-boggling when you think of it. You know, some of the podcasts we'll have done in the run-up to Christmas. If you go back and listen to those and then think about the fact we're now 4 points off of the top six, you know, it doesn't even make sense. But then I suppose that's why we love football.
Yes, it's certainly quite a turnaround in the three podcasts following the Ross County defeat, where we're currently situated in the league, Buster. We sit seventh. We're closing in a place in the top six, which looked for all the world an impossibility. Just at the turn of the year there. It's going to be a hard ask, of course it is, and we discussed this last week, that of course we've been playing teams that have been in and around us in the table. We'll now go into a run where we face the likes of Hearts, Celtic, a fixture at Aberdeen, a fixture at Easter Road, which, while Hibs have had a difficult season and are below us in the league at the moment, it'll certainly be a very tough ask. But winning breeds confidence, doesn't it? And this young team with the enthusiasm to play the game will certainly fancy their chat against anyone right now.
Yeah, you know, I've read people say the breaks maybe came at the wrong time for us because we are on such a run. And, you know, maybe that's, unfortunately, that's how these things come about. But as you said, to have looked at the league, I think 5 games ago, you know, we were 6 points ahead of St Mirren. Don't get me wrong, they've lost the 5 of their games and we've won the 5 of their games. So there's the 21 different points difference now. But, you know, to think about the turnaround there is absolutely, it's phenomenal. And again, a lot of credit has to go to the management team there as well. The I think to be honest with you, even though you know we were having a bit of a meltdown ourselves, when you look at the league, you know, a month or two ago, when you looked at the league, you always kind of thought Livingston would, you know, slide a bit and we could possibly catch them. But to think that we've overtaken Hibs at the moment, and you know we're within touching distance of St Johnstone, it's mind-boggling, as you say. So again, credit to the team, credit to the management. You know, there's been loads of changes. Even, you know, the main thing I think for us was the change in the way we played. I think, you know, if we had had half the results that we've had so far, we'd have been happy as long as the style had changed a bit. So it's really been some run, and it's a hard set of fixtures we've got coming up. So I don't see us obviously winning every game from now until the end of the season, but you know, I don't see there's games there where I don't see us having to go into them with as much fear as we would have a month ago.
Yeah, and that's it, Jay, isn't it? We don't have anything to fear. We weren't expected to finish in the top six. In fact, I saw a few optimistic supporters putting up Motherwell to finish in the top six bets at 50-1. And that was even after the Livingston game. So we're a long shot, and it's at one game, and jumping up two places in the league doesn't really change the fact that we're a long shot. But it gives us something to strive towards, something to get us along to Fir Park for, along with the fact that we've just completely rejuvenated our playing style and we're a much better team to be watching right now. But it's another element that will get the supporters along and keep up the interest levels in these final months of the season. We can now categorically say we're not going to be relegated. So we've got to be looking up. We've got to be looking to challenge. Hearts will come to Fir Park a week tomorrow, and they'll certainly not relish the prospect of coming up against a young team full of confidence, full of desire to play attacking football, and guys like David Turnbull, Jake Hasty, guys that can deliver goals as well. I looked at the team on Wednesday night and thought, initially I was pleased that it was the exact same starting 11, but the depth in the bench as well was really impressive. Mm-hmm. Alex Rodriguez-Gorin was perhaps walking a tightrope in terms of continuing to fly into tackles when he had already been booked. Most of the time he was winning the ball, but we can only be thankful for that because he would have certainly received a second yellow on a few occasions if he had even just slightly mistimed those challenges. We just bring on Carroll McHugh, avoid the risk of him seeing red. Then you've got the likes of Ross McCormack, Danny Johnson, Peter Hartley, Elliot Freer, who played an instrumental part in the deciding goal. We have a squad now that Stephen Robinson can look at and have real dilemmas as to his strongest starting 11.
Yeah, it's pretty. In many respects, it's a pretty ideal position to be in. You know, at this stage in February, of course, we would all like to be higher up the table. We would like to be in the cup competitions. But as you say yourself, you know, we're safe. Relegation is not an issue. That's taken care of. We have, you know, an objective perhaps or an ambition to maybe make the top six. And if we achieve that, it would be a phenomenal, you know, a phenomenal end to the season. But if we don't, then it's not really a surprise. It's not unexpected. So there's not any pressure there. And we're able to bring in guys like Hasty and Turnbull and Campbell in those circumstances. Because I think that, you know, one of the arguments about, for example, extending the league to 16 teams is that, you know, it would allow teams maybe the opportunity to bring in more young players because there would be less threat of relegation. And I think that's, you know, a similar circumstance we find ourselves in now. You know, anything we achieve from now until the end of the season is going to be a bonus. The objective was to avoid relegation. We've done that. So guys like James Scott, you know, is obviously now starting to force his way in. You know, we've obviously seen Connor Salmon not even making the bench in recent weeks, whereas Scott is, you know, he came on at Fir Park. You know, so you've got options there. You know, obviously Barry Maguire's away, but I would imagine if he wasn't on loan, he would maybe be, you know, chat them on the door. So we're in a situation now where there is no pressure. We can go into these games looking for the young guys to go in full of confidence and express themselves, and it's a really ideal situation to be in. And what's quite interesting about you, you know, obviously praising the depth of the squad and the options we've got from the bench, that's almost, I don't want to say happened by accident, but when it kind of highlights for me maybe how naive Stephen Robinson maybe was with his 12 to 18 signing policy during the summer. You know, we actively went to try and strengthen our bench, didn't make a good job of it, and indirectly, almost by accident, we've found ourselves with a strong squad simply by bringing in a couple of young players. Obviously, we've added McCormick and Aribi, but we've also seen the likes of Taylor Sinclair and Biggie move on. And yet, just by bringing in Turnbull, bringing in Hasty, and shuffling things around a wee bit, you now find yourself with a strong starting 11 that's playing well, getting results. And as you say, you know, a very, very strong bench. You're looking at that bench on Wednesday night and, you know, you have game changers like Elliot Freer. You have a guy who can just slot into the middle of the park, a top, you know, a very, very good player in Carroll McHugh. You get your club captain on the bench. So we've almost achieved what it was Stephen Robinson set out to achieve in the summer, but by doing it, you know, almost by accident.
Yeah, that's it. And we look at Elliot Freer bust up, who I don't know. I don't want to say I've given up on him, but I just never thought that he was going to ever be able to be utilised in his strongest position, and therefore his time at the club seemed like it was winding down to an end. He's been given the chance to play wide in his natural position at a fantastic game against Hamilton just after Christmas. He picks up an injury, which, again, that's kind of been the story of his career at Fir Park. So unfortunate that Aribi and Hasty come in playing as wingers and do it so well that he can't actually get back into the team. But he got that opportunity on Wednesday, and it would have been very easy for Elliot Freer to let his head drop and to be a bit despondent about the circumstances he found himself in. But what he did is he came on, he was positive. It was a great bit of skill to lose his man, and then he delivers a great ball for Alan Campbell. Full credit to Elliot Freer for sticking in there. And I think he deserves an extended stay at Fir Park because he is an absolutely brilliant option, whether he be starting a game in his natural position or coming off the bench and where he can be a real game changer.
I'm quite a fan of Elliot Freer, so you know, I'm maybe going to be a bit more pro him than negative towards him. But you know, when he first joined, he had a great, you know, 4 or 5 months at the end of the season. Effectively, you know, probably effectively kept us up, I would say. I think he had maybe 7 or 8 assists. I think he scored a goal against Kilmarnock. You know, so it started really well for him. And that's the sort of player that you'd be looking for, somebody who chips in with an assist, makes an impact. And then, as you say, you know, it went downhill a bit from playing at left wing back. Certainly didn't help. So there was I think there was a fair amount of the crowd were getting on his back. You know, we spoke about it before, where he'd pick the ball up 10 yards inside his own half. He'd be the last man on the left hand side, and you'd have 15 people in the stand shouting at him to go on a 30-yard mazy run past 4 players.
Yeah, that's back to even the start of the season, isn't it? And the game that stands out is the game at Clyde and the Betfred.
It's easy to say, oh, go and beat your man. He's a winger, that's his job. And it's so easy for them, you know, to say, beat your man, you're a winger, that's your job. But you know, it was coming from a very deep position, and that's not his job. He will not be used to that. So it's good to see him pushed forward a bit. And as you said, you know, he's had a couple of great games. You know, Hamilton, he obviously started, they lost his position. And as you said, you know, he's come on, made an impact. Obviously, you know, crossed the ball on the other night. You know, got in front of his man for the penalty at Dundee. So I'm a fan of Elliot Freer. MD, who says that, you know, he's not good enough for this level, or, you know, whatever the shite you hear about him. You know, I hate to use any sort of footballing cliche, but, you know, people always say wingers will be in and out of games. But if Elliot Freer was constantly setting up goals, constantly brilliant for ourselves. You know, he wouldn't be here. And again, that's an arse-shite cliche for a team our size. But I think Elliot Freer has got something to offer. And, you know, if he's willing to extend his contract and it works out for both parties, I don't see why, you know, why we wouldn't keep him on.
Elliot Freer's contract is up in the summer, isn't it?
You put it in my head. I don't know if it is, to be fair. But, you know... just even on Freer as well, you know, I mean, Aribe's come in and Aribe's brilliant, Aribe's exciting, but again, I wasn't at St Mirren, but like I've read and like Jay said, you know, Aribe was sort of hit and miss at Dundee, sounds like he was the exact same at St Mirren. You know, that's just wingers games. Aribe's, as I say, very exciting and doing great things at certain times, obviously, but you know, he's I don't think he's chipped in with any goals or any assists or anything directly. And I'm not having a go and saying Elliot Freer should be playing instead of Aribe or anything. I'm just making a quick comparison. You know, Freer said less minutes since Aribe arrived. Couple of assists, including obviously winning the penalty if you want to include that. But you know, it leaves us in a great position where we've got a guy like Jake Casey who's on absolute fire, Aribe who's doing really well, and Freer who's making the most of the time he's getting.
Yeah, that's it. And Jay, that's about the 14th time I've said it, and yeah, that's it. Another element of it is you've got guys like Craig Tanner, Chris Cadden, Christian Mbulu as well, who are all going to be chapping at the door when they return from injury too.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it is. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that's it as well. But, yeah, as I said earlier, it's quite an ideal, I think, position we find ourselves in. We obviously don't want to, you know, as I've said before, get too carried away. But, you know, in terms of where this season could have went, you know, particularly with folk getting on the manager's back, the style of play we were playing, you know, I think it's quite a big turnaround just from top to bottom. And as you say, you know, you're sitting there, we have a good start in 11 that I think we would be happy to see the same 11 for the Hearts game. Regardless, you know, assuming that there's no injuries or that between now and then, you have a strong bench. And that is, you know, again, without guys that you've mentioned, you know, guys who can come in. You know, Chrissy Cadden has been, you know, quite a, you know, a massive, massive part of Stephen Robinson's side for, you know, since Robinson got the job. And he's been a big, big player for Motherwell. And yet, you could almost be forgiven for forgetting that he's at the club at the moment, because you know guys like Hasty, Campbell, Turnbull, Aribe are really kind of, you know, on fire and giving us, you know, a lot to cheer about. So it's a great position to be in. Obviously, I'm not too sure when those guys are expected to return, but yeah, if we can just keep things ticking along nicely, it's, you know, it's ideal, absolutely ideal. Obviously, no idea of what's going to happen between now and the end of the season. Can we make the top six? It remains to be seen, but I think it's just a really, really good position to be in, and we're kind of back enjoying going to games again, which is really what it's all about. There's no point in, you know, coming away from Firth Park, win, lose or draw, but still feeling frustrated at what you've seen, regardless of the result, still put off by it, not entertained, going home to have a moan on social media about it. It's enjoyable again. You know, you're sitting here on a Saturday thinking, you know, I wish there was a game on today. I want to go see Jake Hasty again. I want to go see David Turnbull. Whereas a few weeks ago, I would have bitten your hand off for another free Saturday, so I didn't need to go and watch the hoofball.
Yes, it is quite a dramatic turnaround of fortunes. And Elliot Freer's contract is up in June of 2019, so I'm glad that I made that point and actually was correct about it. It'll be interesting in that regard as well, because you've got Aribe, a player that clearly has great talent and is regarded as quite a prospect. You would wonder whether Forrest will be using this time at Firth Park to gauge where he is at in terms of their first team. That kind of leaves you in a wee bit of a quandary, as you quite often are with loan players, as to whether do you play Aribe who has come in and done well but isn't loan and isn't our player? Or do you give Elliot Freer that opportunity to demonstrate his qualities? But despite the fact he's not starting games just now, Elliot Freer certainly did demonstrate his qualities on Wednesday night with a fantastic assist. I was delighted for Freer, I really was, because, as I say, I thought he'd got to the stage where he was just going to fizzle out and just be moved on at the end of the season. but he's really worked hard to turn it around. And I think it was you that said it a couple of weeks ago, Jay, that it's incredible what happens when you play someone in their natural position. They tend to thrive a lot better than they would in a role of wing back where they're not very good at tackling.
Yeah, it would be really kind of disappointing. It would, you know, if Elliot Freer has waited patiently, you know, the only real time I can kind of remember him getting a proper gig from the start at winger prior to this wee run, or this year when we've changed shape, was up at Pittodrie, where he was bizarrely played on the right wing. So, you know, he's been forced to play at wing back. He's been left at the bench. He's taken a lot of criticism. You know, as Buster was saying earlier, fans got on his back, but a lot of it unmerited for me. And he's waited patiently. And it would be, you know, a shame if finally we change to a shape that suits Elliot Freer. And just as we bring in Aribe and Hasty back for Alloa, and he finds himself, you know, unable to make an impact. So as much as I would still, you know, be starting him on the bench at the moment, because I think Hasty and Aribe have done enough to merit their inclusion, it is great that he is still able to come on. And as I said earlier, he's a game changer. When we're playing with wingers and we're playing the style that we're now playing, you've got somebody in Elliot Freer who, even if he's on the bench from the start, can come on, you know, after an hour, 20 minutes, 10 minutes to go, and can, you know, win you a game, which is what he did on Wednesday night.
Absolutely. And then, Buster, we move on now to Hearts after a frustrating time to have a break. It's a self-inflicted break, of course, because we couldn't do the job against Ross County, and therefore our participation in the Scottish Cup ended. The game moved to a Sunday against Hearts, an early kick-off, with plans for a big night out on Saturday night. That isn't the ideal either, but a tough tie. We've played Hearts on three occasions this season. We've come off second best in all three occasions, albeit each fixture has been narrow. A 1-0 defeat at Fir Park, a 1-0 defeat at Tynecastle, and then the 4-2 in the League Cup, where it was 2-2 with 87 minutes played, and somehow we contrived to spectacularly collapse in the fashion that we did. We know what Hearts are all about. They're a physical side. And guys like Stephen Naismith and Ekpeazu, they've got goals in them as well. But they have taken a significant dip since that fantastic start to the season. I think back to games like the 5-0 at Livingston. They were disappointing midweek against Livingston as well. But they've had a fair few poor performances in them. And I guess we've got to hope that they've got another one in them come Sunday. They're looking solid in that top six. They're going to have a bit of a fight in their hands for Europe. They obviously turned it around against Kilmarnock to narrow the gap in them in fourth place. There's a bit at stake for both teams here.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. As you said, Hearts are probably where, you know, you'd expect them to be, sort of a couple of points off third position. You know, I honestly don't really know. As you say, there's times where I've seen them and they've looked awful. There's times where I've seen them and they've looked pretty decent. So I've not really seen enough of them recently to think that, you know, it could be very difficult or it could be very easy. But we're at home, and it's, as always in this league, you know, I think if we put up a good home performance, we're capable of beating just about anybody in the league. So it's something which I don't really expect there to be any changes in the lineup. I think we have to play our game. There's obviously minor adjustments you have to make tactically to deal with, you know, Hearts players, but you don't want to get bogged down in changing anything to, you know, to suit Hearts basically, or to try and nullify Hearts. Just get on with your game. I'll let it, you know, see what happens, and you know, let the young boys play football.
Absolutely. I don't think that there's much need for any sort of changes, Jay. As Buster's already alluded to, we're the home team. We're five without defeat, five wins in the spin in the league. We've got to take that positivity and confident approach into this game. A defeat wouldn't be a disaster, but I think we look back to last year and some of the negativity and the poor performances, it was because we were going out and being overly cautious, and the style of football that was on display. Now we seem to have found that winning formula and that formula for exciting attacking football. Let's stick with it and not revert too much to type because we're playing a big physical side. We talked about it after the game on Wednesday night. We're going to find different ways to win football matches. It was more rigid in its setup on Wednesday night. You're going to sometimes have to come under the cosh when you're away from home. And that's just natural, particularly in a league where many of the teams are of a pretty similar standard and a similar level. At home, though, you want to see a more positive outlook, an attacking approach. And going on the last couple of games, that has brought positive results with it.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think we were talking about it at the game on Wednesday. I don't have any issues with us, you know, going away from home and playing a slightly more cautious or defensive style. That's, you know, par for the course, unless you're a team pretty much like Celtic. You know, that's something that all clubs need to do. And I suppose the temptation would possibly be there to kind of approach the Hearts game with the same mentality. But I think you're right. I think, you know, recent performances have shown that we are good enough. You know, guys like Hasty and Aribe, Turnbull are good enough against the Hearts to create things, to create chances, to score goals. So why not go and try and take the game to them? Try and even look for a good, promising, fast-paced early start like we did against Livingston and just see how Hearts respond to that, see how they deal with it. It will be a very difficult game. It will be the most difficult game we have had on this run. I think, you know, as great as it's been, you know, 5 games, 5 wins in the trot, we need to obviously keep it in perspective of the opposition we've been playing. You know, a Livingston side that's in a bit of a free-for-all. Aki's Dundee and St Mirren, obviously, all in the relegation battle. And a Hibs team that, were just not on it at all that night. So we obviously need to keep things in perspective. And this will be an entirely new challenge for a lot of our younger players. Hearts, for many, many years, in my opinion, have possibly been, you know, top of the streetwise league table in terms of, you know, little kicks, little niggles, going down easily. You know, all the kind of the dark arts, if you like, that you talk about in football. I think Hearts have been the masters of that anytime I've seen them against us for many seasons now. So it will be an entirely different challenge and it will be a learning experience. You know, guys like Hasty, Aribe, you know, the younger players perhaps wouldn't have came up against that kind of that side of the game. And that's not necessarily a criticism on Hearts. It's part and parcel of the game and Hearts do it well. But it's something that, you know, you tend to notice every time you come up against them. They're very much masters of those dark arts. So that'll be interesting to see how we deal with it because it will be something that perhaps like Jake Hasty maybe hasn't came up against. But he'll be on, you know, he'll be absolutely flying with confidence. So I don't see any reason to be too defensive or to be too cautious. As you guys have mentioned, you know, Hearts have been a little up and down themselves. You know, we're on the good run of form. They're not, you know, obviously at a point against Livy and a win against Killie. And I think they beat St Johnstone as well. But prior to that, you know, they lost to Dundee. So they're certainly beatable. They'll come to Firth Park. They'll probably, you know, a Craig Levein side will be tough to break down. They'll be physical. They'll, you know, do all that, the kind of the dark arts and the streetwise side of it. But it's up to us to respond to it. It's up to us to make the game more about us, get guys like Turnbull and Hasty in the ball and see what happens. But, you know, we can be optimistic now. I think a few weeks ago, the prospect of a Hearts side coming to Firth Park would be met with pessimism and, you know, a bit of going along out of duty rather than anything else. But I think we can go to it now actually, you know, full of confidence, looking forward to it and knowing that we have the players to really take the game at Hearts.
Another element of perhaps playing a more defensive style of football against Hearts is in players like Naismith and Ikpeazu, they've got guys that can punish you in that end of the park. So if you're going to go out and try and defend against these guys, there's quite a few occasions that they're going to get the better of you.
That's always the danger. As you say, you know, that there's a time and a place for sitting in and, you know, trying to hit in the break and whatever, but there is always a danger that if you let, you know, better teams or, you know, bigger teams have more of the ball and come at you, you might never get a chance to really get on the ball and, you know, do any damage yourself. So there's a fine balance between soaking up a bit of pressure and just, you know, building a brick wall and parking the bus, I suppose. But, you know, I don't really expect us to be very defensive. As I say, there'll be minor adjustments for dealing with guys like Naismith and Ikpeazu, if, you know, he's playing, or whoever plays, you know. But I think it's more important that, you know, we let the guys like Turnbull, Hasty, Aribe, you know, Free, or whoever plays, we get these guys involved and let them play their own game. That's obviously been our strengths recently. So I don't think we'd do anything to compromise that. And, you know, as I say, it should be a good game. You know, us flying, Hearts, you know, being a better team this season, it should be a really good game on paper.
And last week we talked about the prospects of new contracts for some of the young players. Following the St Mirren game, Stephen Robinson said that the wages freed up by the sale of Ryan Bowman and Gail Bigramana has allowed them to offer new contracts to Jake Hasty, Barry Maguire and James Scott. That's certainly an interesting one, and one that we all hoped would happen. Hasty in particular is grabbing all the headlines just now. He's had a fruitful loan spell at Alloa and then came back absolutely flying, making an impact that I don't think any of us could have possibly anticipated in the first team. That straight away prompts interest from elsewhere, and Keith Jackson somewhat stroked the fire. Whether Keith Jackson has just made up the story or not remains to be seen. It wouldn't be the first time. With rumours of a move away and English Championship interest, which is completely unsurprising, to be perfectly honest. He scored a few goals that will have been broadcast all around the world and Sky and various other broadcasters, because the goals have been that good that he's scored. His performances have been absolutely excellent. So, of course, given that he'll be able to be picked up in a free transfer, he'll be on the radar of other clubs. What you've just got to hope, I guess, is that he looks at the likes of David Turnbull, who signed a new contract, to get a bit more first-team experience, a wee bit more streetwise, and just become a more rounded footballer before the time comes where it is time to move on and to bigger things. I'll never say bigger and better things. I wouldn't say that anything's better than Motherwell, but certainly bigger things in terms of potential earnings and also winning major honours. Jake Hasty, at this moment in time, he's got the world at his feet. He really could go on to be a fantastic, fantastic footballer. But by the same token, he's only had half a dozen first-team games for Motherwell. You would hope he would also look at guys like Ben Hall and various others who have went down south and not really been given the opportunity and subsequently regress in their career.
I think it was a couple of weeks ago, I think it was me and Jay, I don't know if you heard the conversation at the football, but it was, to talk about the youngsters going down south and stuff. Like, for example, Stuart McKinstry is, as far as we know, basically going to go to Leeds pretty soon. Now, Stuart McKinstry is 16 years old, very, very young. So to compare that to, say, somebody like Ben Hall, who was, 19 maybe when he went to Brighton? Was that roughly correct?
Yeah, I would say so. I was actually trying to think of more kind of young players that have left and went down south and kind of disappeared, but Ben Hall was the only one that actually stood out when I was thinking about that there.
Well, Lee Irwin did the exact same, near enough. You know, he went to Leeds, never really got a look in there.
Great shout.
And, you know, now he's in the football wilderness because he's disputes with the Iranian tractor team or whatever it was. But the point that me and Jay were discussing was, for example, McKinstry's 16, he can go down there, learn quite a bit, just like anybody can at 19, but, you know, he can really get into the sort of the programs or training. And by the time he's 19, he'll be the same way that a lot of the young boys down there are, big, massive tanks, you know, and athletic guys. Whereas maybe guys like Erwin, Ben Hall, they're going down there at 19, having just broke into a Motherwell team. You know, I don't know how many appearances Erwin had, Ben Hall, you're probably lucky if he had 30 appearances. You know, and they're going down there at 19, which is a bit older, maybe thinking, you know, I was in the first team at here, I should maybe do a bit better here. And, you know, it doesn't seem to work out for them. So I don't think guys who are maybe 19, 20, going down south at that age, and, you know, unless they're extremely phenomenal, I don't think it really works out that way. So it's maybe best that guys who come through at that age, rather than getting picked up when they are still in the under-17s or whatever, they get their first team football, you know, at teams like Mullow. And this is not just a Mullow thing. You know, it could be at any club, but I think they're best maybe to, you know, get their experience, play a year or two, and then move on. And, you know, maybe the time they're 21, 22, see if they can then take the step up at that level. Because, as I say, you know, the sort of people who tend to move on, you know, 19, 20, 21, there's very few of them that I can think of that would, you know, stand out as in had went on to have very successful careers elsewhere.
And I don't want to be kind of disparaging, because for me, Louis Moult is one of the best talents we've had at Fir Park, getting one of the most significant impacts in the last 10, 15 years. He was an absolutely fantastic player for us. But I look at him going to Preston, a lower half of the Championship in England side, and he's very rarely getting a game. I know he's injured just now, but I can't remember seeing him playing 4 or 5 games in the spin. So it's clearly a very difficult league to make an impact in. I know we can kind of look at guys like Jaden Stockley, who was an absolute failure at Aberdeen and has now made his way up to Preston. But it's not as easy as just going down south and hitting the ground running again. Louis Moult's really struggled, and certain players are suited to Scottish football. But I think getting that game time under your belt is so significant as well. Gaining a bit of experience. There's no doubt that Louis Moult, if he came back to any team in Scotland, he would score goals. But maybe it was just a good fit at the time. I just think that you can get carried away, particularly with young players. So we've got to kind of approach it with a degree of caution. Jake Hastie's made an incredible start to his Motherwell career. But by the same token, he's a young guy. He will have spells of inconsistency. It's just natural. I think it's a better thing to do it here, where it's an environment he's used to. He's surrounded by guys in the youth team that he's progressed through the ranks with, rather than going down south and maybe getting a bit swallowed up. I'm not know much of his personality there, but it's just it just seems like a bit of a risk in terms of even just a career move.
I think the thing is, it's something that we'll talk about all the time. You know, we're the kind of club that, unfortunately, you know, when young players come through, there is that talk. And I suppose there's almost an element of bias in it. You know, we want the player to stay, so we maybe kind of convince ourselves that that is best for them. But every player's different. It's not just, you know, as has already been mentioned, it's not just about moving on to better things, as in standard of football. You know, it's lifestyle. You know, some of these guys might worry or be concerned or be convinced by their agent or their family that you know, such a move isn't ever going to come around again, and they take that opportunity to make sure that it happens, rather than, you know, maybe playing it for, you know, Chrissy Cadden, for example. You know, would anybody be surprised if Cadden now, you know, continues to maybe see out his career at Motherwell? Or if he does move on, is he really going to go to the level of club that perhaps people would have spoke about a few years ago? Probably not. So I think there's an element of perhaps feeling as though you have to take that opportunity. But in terms of Jake Hastie, I think that it's, you know, for me, it is paper talk. I don't have any doubt that the clubs mentioned would have had scouts at the game watching them. Those same scouts will probably be at games every day watching, you know, with lists of players that are endless. That's their job. Their job is to go and watch players. The idea that because they were at St Mirren Park means that Jake Hastie's future at Fir Park is suddenly in doubt, I don't quite buy that. I also wouldn't be surprised if it's, you know, perhaps a couple of tricks from Jake's own agent to, you know, kind of throw that spanner in the works while negotiations are going on at Motherwell to try and maybe get a few extra quid out of the club in terms of a new deal for Hastie, because that's just the way things work in football these days. So I certainly don't, you know, I take it with a bit of a pinch of salt. That's not to say that I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a bigger club from down south offered him a deal in the summer, or you know, a pre-contract just now, because he is a talented player and he will have, you know, grabbed some headlines and caught some eyes from down south. But, you know, until something's kind of concrete, I do tend to take these kind of things with a pinch of salt. You know, reading the article, you would think that the clubs mentioned only ever send scouts out to send, you know, to watch guys that they're definitely going to sign, when in reality, those guys are out watching players every day of the week.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any lack of reality in the sense that Jake Hasty will move on eventually. I just kind of hope it's at the right time. I think it is quite early on in his career to be thinking about that just now. But as you said, I think that Chris Cadden could be held up by agents as an example of a player that didn't move on at the right time, and perhaps as a result of that, stalled his earning potential. Because as we approach the end of Chris Cadden's contract, it's quite difficult to envisage what sort of team he would go to. Is it a kind of Ali Crawford type situation at Hamilton, where a player that seemed destined for really big things, I think he ended up at Doncaster, didn't he? And it's just not really the kind of glamour or big move that many would have thought he would have got 2 or 3 years ago.
I can't even tell you where Ali Crawford is, to be honest with you. But
that's a good shout.
See, just to put obviously we have been, well, me, I'm being a bit, I'm thinking as a Millwall fan, you know, I'd love these guys to stay on, but even if you go back to Irwin and Ben Hall, you know, fair play to those guys, because Lee Irwin, when he was in when he was in Iran, was probably earning a week what he earned a year at Millwall, you know what I mean? So fair play to them. It's a hard choice, you know. Obviously, everybody, no matter who you're, wants to make more money. So, you know, if the guys get the opportunity, and if it hopefully works out well for both sides, fair enough. You know, I mean, if these guys sign a contract and move on with a decent transfer fee, a big wedge in there, then fair enough. But, you know, as I say, I'm obviously just thinking we as a Millwall fan, you know, I'd love these guys to stay here and play football. But you know what? As I say, it's a job basically. So fair play to them, but you know, I'd love them just to be brilliant for the next 4 or 5 years here. 4 or 5 years is stretching, I suppose. But you know, give us 3 great years, and we'll sell you for £1 million. How's that?
Sounds like a smashing deal.
James Laurie's agency.
Yeah, I do hope that is something that's in the pipeline. Certainly, I'm very much pining for a job with you as well. Just a final one for this week. Motherwell women's team have dropped ladies from their title, and fucking idiots online have lost their shit about this. One of the most ridiculous overreactions that has been seen in quite some time in the internet, and social media itself tends to be somewhere where people lose their minds on a daily basis. This is just another brilliant example of it. A read through of the replies is just a who's who of all the idiots in the world at this moment in time, it seems. Just some horrible, horrible people, some horrible, horrible replies. And for what? There's absolutely nothing has changed. There's someone that's involved somewhat in the setup. The coverage will be the same. There won't be a deluge of updates in women's football. It'll be the exact same as it was last season. It's just another team being taken under fully the banner of Motherwell Football Club, which they always have been, it must be said, and it didn't seem to annoy anybody then. It's very, very confusing. This is a group of players who train 3 nights a week. They play on a Sunday. They give up a lot of time for pretty little reward, it must be said, for the club badge. I'm kind of lost for words as to why people are so annoyed about this, Jay. It's baffling.
That's it. It's one of those, I hate the kind of the old saying about, you know, if you've got nothing good to say, don't say anything. But I think it applies, you know, brilliantly here. It's the kind of thing where, you know, it's a small change. As you said yourself, it's something that has kind of been widely accepted for earlier to the present day, and yet suddenly, you know, obviously it's been announced, and suddenly folk are bizarrely losing their shit over it. Again, we need to obviously keep things in context. There's a lot of good comments, a lot of positivity about it, but I can't get my head around what the issue is. They play in the Scottish Women's Premier League. If your concern is that they need to have some sort of label that's a female team, they play in a female division. There's absolutely no need for any team within that division to, you know, also stipulate that it's a women's team. And if your concern is that you're somehow going to get mixed up over what Motherwell is being discussed, then, you know, I just don't get that at all. You're thick, basically. I don't understand how, if you go on social media or the internet or you're watching TV, I think it will be plainly obvious what Motherwell is being discussed. It's just folk who like to be annoyed about things of this type. Another good example was when the club and Paycare announced that they were going to be, you know, joining the fight on period poverty by providing free sanitary products in the toilets at Fir Park, and you had folk replying, you know, demanding that male fans get free razors. It's absolutely, like, it's beyond laughable. I just don't understand it. It's one of those things where even if you're, you know, your reaction to it is to be like, oh, that's a bit unnecessary, or, you know, to be negative about it, to then put the effort in to actually, you know, having a go or posting something online, it's just sad. That's all it is. It's sad and pathetic, and I don't understand it for a second. It's absolutely baffling, as you say.
The only, again, as I say, I think I follow all the accounts anyway, the ladies' account and that as well, so it wouldn't bother me whatsoever, but the only thing I can even understand, I suppose, is probably the best word would be, if somebody has got no interest whatsoever in the women's game, they might have to scroll past a few tweets, unfortunately. But, you know, it's again, what difference does that make? And when you're looking at the comments on there, to be fair, as I was scrolling through some of the comments, very few of the comments were from Motherwell fans, which I found strangely weird as well. Couple of Celtic fans made some daft comments. Couple of Rangers fans made some daft comments.
Obsessed.
It was really weird. You think Ryan Bowman had said something about it or something? You know, it was like that. As I say, it doesn't really bother me at all. I've got very little interest, unfortunately, in the women's game. But you know, as I say, I see the results. I know, Sparrow, you're involved, so whenever you're talking about it or whatever, I've asked you questions about it, and, you know, finding out about it, whatever. But as you say, there isn't a problem here, and I don't think MD is worth MD's time to try and make one.
Guys, give me 2 seconds. That's a postman.
Plug your mic in for the last 10 minutes.
We're going to hear the sound upgraded live on the podcast.
Well, maybe no hear the feedback that when we talk about some things here.
Yeah, I know. That just fucking puts me off every time.
So someone's replied in the podcast Twitter, wish the guy who sounds like he's on a dodgy phone would stop pausing halfway through every sentence, as I keep thinking the podcast is cut off. It's really annoying.
I've just read that myself.
Don't know. I suspect that's possible to me, but we'll wait and see.
Well, they'll not be able to tell once you plug your mic in, mate, anyway.
That's it.
Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got for this week. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
No bother. Cheers.
You've been listening to the NFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Find you. There's no point in trying to hide. inside you, so we speak no words.